Hi, and welcome back to Market Talk. My name is Jamie, and today I'm going to be talking about the Icelandic financial crisis, how the global financial crisis of 2007 and 2008 affected the Icelandic economy, the before and after of the financial crisis, and how the crisis shaped the country for years to come. I hope you enjoy. Now, Iceland is a very interesting economy because prior to the financial crisis, it had begun to grow very reliant on the financial services sector. Much like the UK in many regards, Iceland had developed into a service economy throughout the 80s and 90s, again undergoing a lot of the same neoliberal reforms that we saw in the UK and in much of the Western economy. Now, what we saw in the prelude to the crisis, the immediate prelude in the 2000s, was a rapid expansion in the banking sector size. In fact, the total assets of the three largest banks in Iceland reached about 923% of GDP in 2007. Now, that is remarkable. 900% of GDP is an astronomical figure. And even if you compare that to the likes of the UK, where you had huge shadow economies, shadow banking sectors, it never reached that much of GDP, which I think really highlighted the extent to which the Icelandic economy was over-reliant on the financial sector. Now, how did this occur? Well, like I mentioned, many similarities can be drawn between Iceland, the UK, and also the US, in terms of its banking policies. This is because in the 1990s, we saw aggressive deregulation of the banking sector. A lot of rules we think of, such as capital requirements, were scaled down, slimmed down, or even abolished, which allowed for more banking sector activity, more derivatives and other financial instruments to be created, and overall, more products could be created and used that weren't possible before. Now, in terms of the timeline of the crisis, early 2008 saw initial signs of distress, as we saw not only in Iceland, but global credit markets started to tighten. Now, this was in part due to what was happening in the US, as Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve were increasing interest rates. They were very aggressively tightening their monetary policy in response to higher inflation levels that had been brought about by the global oil shock in the Middle East. We saw that oil prices were rapidly rising, and in response, the US Federal Reserve was tightening their monetary policy. Now, as I've talked about in previous episodes, this was undoubtedly a mistake, and I would say the main trigger for the financial crisis, for the subprime mortgage crisis, that occurred in not only the US, but in much of Europe, including Iceland. And this, of course, played into tighter credit markets in Ireland and in Iceland, as well as the ripple effect of tighter monetary policy by the Federal Reserve, the world's reserve currency, was felt globally. Now, by September 2008, we saw that the financial crisis exacerbated, and the downturn was also exacerbated as well. And this, of course, led to what was the severe liquidity crisis in the US, but also in Iceland in particular. Now, what was most particular in Iceland, and I mentioned before that the three largest banks reached 923% of GDP by 2007, is that in October of 2008, the government took over all of these three banks. Now, this was very unprecedented. And I think if you compare Iceland's response to that of the UK and US, even though both the UK and US bailed out some banks, they didn't bail out banks on the scale that Iceland did in terms of their share of GDP. In the US, of course, they let some insurance companies and investment banks go bust, and that was the same in the UK as well. But in Iceland, they protected their three largest institutions, which I think really set them apart from their Western counterparts. Now, as a result, Iceland did receive a $5.1 billion bailout from the IMF and also other Nordic countries to try and stabilize its banking system and economy, because of course it was so reliant on the financial sector before the crisis took hold. Now, as a result of this reliance, we saw that the financial crisis produced a 10% fall in real GDP between the third quarter of 2007 and the third quarter of 2010. Now, this is astronomical. In 3 years, you saw GDP fall by 10%. Remarkable, and in fact, one of the biggest falls in all of the Western economies. In fact, positive GDP growth only resumed in 2011, with its GDP reaching over $20 billion, bouncing back from a 2009 low of $12.9 billion. Now, of course, because of just how big the financial sector was in Iceland as a proportion of their total economy, unemployment spiked, and inflation rates also spiked, rising to 14% in 2008, before gradually being brought back under control. Now, as a result of this, we had to see some reforms. We saw reforms, of course, in the UK, with changes in policy, with, for example, the Bank of England having more control over regulation in the banking and financial sector. And this was similar in Iceland. We saw that by 2011, Iceland was on the path to recovery. And instead of it being led by the financial sector, just how big the financial sector was in Iceland, of course, before the crisis, it was mainly supported by sectors like tourism, which significantly boosted foreign exchange earnings. Now, of course, Iceland also implemented a lot of the very stringent reforms in the financial sector to try and rebuild trust and stability. And it also led to quite significant political and judicial reforms as well, including, and this I think is very notable, the prosecution of banking executives, with about 39 bankers receiving prison sentences. Now, this, of course, wasn't really seen in the US or the UK. In fact, I think in the UK, only one Credit Suisse analyst was thrown under the bus for the whole crisis, which is really quite remarkable, given just how much bigger it was. Of course, in Iceland, it was big as a proportion of their GDP. But in the UK and US, the scale of the many billions and trillions that the financial sector represented was far, far bigger. And yet, you didn't really see many prison sentences, if at all, unlike what happened in Iceland. So in Iceland, the approach was to bail out and nationalize the three biggest banks, but also punish the people responsible. Whereas in the US and UK, they tended not to punish people with jail sentences, but also let a few companies go under. And I think that's really the defining line here, the defining differences between the approaches of Iceland and the UK and the US. Now, in terms of the conclusion from this, I think the things that we can take away, which are quite interesting, is that Iceland's recovery strategy, I think, does offer quite useful insights into managing financial crises. Again, the different response that we saw in Iceland compared to the West, as well as the importance of, you know, maintaining these operational banking services during a crisis. I think it also highlighted the threats and the economic concerns you have of rapid financial sector expansion, which of course was unable to occur in Iceland, more so than I would say in the UK and US, given just how big this crisis in the financial sector was as a proportion of their GDP. It highlighted the importance of regulatory oversight, and I think what we've seen since then is Iceland has recovered. We've seen their economy bounce back. I mentioned how just after 3 years, we started to see positive economic growth. And, you know, we saw, even though, for example, their public debt rocketed to over 100% of GDP by the end of 2010, with unemployment rising from 1% in 2007 to 9% in 2009, we have seen the recovery. And actually, you have seen gradual deregulation following the financial crisis, with in fact the gradual easing of capital controls fully by 2017, one of the policy measures that was implemented following the financial crisis. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time.